The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A few weeks ago, we ran a poem in the magazine by Max Ritvo. He's a young guy, just 25, and this is his first poem in the magazine. It's a very tough piece. The poem is about an experimental treatment that Max is undergoing involving mice. Ritvo was diagnosed when he was just a teenager with Ewing sarcoma, a rare, and for Ritvo, an incurable cancer. In the poem, he addresses the mice being used for the experiment. It's called Poem to My Litter.
Hey!
Hi.
How are you?
He talked about the poem with Mary Harris, the host of WNYC's podcast, Only Human.
I've been thinking of this interview as kind of a celebration, because the last time we talked, you were shopping your manuscript, and now...
It happened.
It happened. And you have a poem in The New Yorker. And you told me Tom Waits is going to blurb your
book. I can read you the Tom Waits blurb. It's really good.
What is it?
You wrote a poem. Let me get it. Tom Waits was the first musician that I listened to cover to cover. And it really deeply influenced my poetry. So I would write these like poems like about hobos and stuff that were just really cringeworthy. But also just this idea of like having really theatrical cinematic voices in my poems and, you know, a series of plot points happening in my poems. That's stuff that I got from Tom Waits, and it never really left the DNA of my writing. So this is Tom Waits.
A Max Ritvo poem is a map.
I won't do the whole thing in his voice. A map drawn by hand to show where the body is buried. A card trick with words. Don't show me how you did it. Like reading the last sentence in a book first, dragging words across the page like a bow across a string, a piece of candy covered with ants, it's my favorite one, like silverfish ate the words off a page and left you a riddle, all of the above.
Oh, I love it. He wrote you a poem for your book
of
poetry.
Yeah, he wrote a poem to my poems.
So you guys just came out to New York.
We did, yeah. Goodbye tour.
That's pretty dark.
Yeah, I'm just trying not to think about that too much.
So is it weird to travel now?
It was hard. I brought an oxygen tank with me, and I loaded myself up on painkillers and stuff. And the airport was very difficult. But, you know, I'm home here, and I love it here.
Do you write more now?
Yeah. The poetry I'm writing less of this instant. Last January, I got some bad news that, like, If this immune therapy doesn't work, it's going to be terminal soon, is, you know, what we heard. And I got really sort of catastrophically depressed and wrote some searingly, searingly beautiful poems, if I do say so myself. And a poem to my litter is, you know, of that era and some of the newer poems in the book. That was this rare moment where my physical illness and my mental illness twinned into this little twin flame of despair, and it was very productive for my poetry.
Why don't we have you read the poem from The New Yorker, and then we'll talk, because it's such a specific, it's very specific.
Sure.
About
I want to talk about the mices, yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk about the mices too.
Yeah. Poem to my litter. My genes are in mice, and not in the banal way that man's old genes are in the beasts. My doctors split my tumors up and scattered them into the bones of 12 mice. We give the mice poisons I might, in the future, want for myself. We watch each mouse like a crystal ball. I wish it was perfect, but sometimes the death we see doesn't happen when we try it again in my body. My tumors are old, older than mice can be. They first grew in my flank a decade ago. Then they went to my lungs and down my femurs and into the hives in my throat that hatch white cells. The mice only have a tumor each in the leg. Their tumors have never grown up, uprooted and moved, learned to sleep in any bed the vast body turns down. Before the tumors can spread, they bust open the legs of the mice, who bleed to death. Next time, the doctors plan to cut off the legs in the nick of time so the tumors will spread, but I still have both my legs. To complicate things further, mouse bodies fight off my tumors. We have to give the mice AIDS, so they'll harbor my genes. I want my mice to be just like me. I don't have any children. I named them all Max. First they were Max 1, Max 2, but now they're all just Max. No playing favorites. They don't know they're named, of course. They're like children you've traumatized and tortured, so they won't let you visit. I hope, Maxes, some good in you is of me. Even my suffering is good, in part. Sure, I swell with rage, fear, the stuff that makes you see your tail as a bar on the cage, but then the feelings pass. And since I do absolutely nothing, my pride, like my fur, all gone. Nothing happens to me. And if a whole lot of nothing happens to you, Maxes, has peace, which is what we want. Trust me.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did therapies work in the mouse that didn't work in you?
Yeah, I mean, variously. There was a drug that was over a year away from clinical trials.
So this is a drug that has never been tried in humans.
It has never been tried in humans, and it's side effect free in the animal models, and it offers remission if it works.
Are you still taking it?
The drug? Yeah, I am. I am.
Can you tell me what your day-to-day life is like right now?
So the scans came back. They were pretty bad. Like, we're staying on this drug, but they were bad, and my health conditions deteriorated. I have tumors in my pelvis, and I have tumors in my femurs, and I'm in pain. It's hard for me to breathe. One of my lungs is basically clogged up with tumors, so you probably notice my voice sounds a little less robust.
And you're coughing.
And I'm coughing, yeah. And that's scary. It's very scary to have. I've been getting fevers, neoplastic fevers, fevers that they're called tumor fevers. It's just at a certain point, a tumor gets so big, it starts leaching off into your body. And it's exhausting to run a 102, 101 degree fever for 2-3 weeks in a row. And in LA, I've just been with my family and been with Victoria, having friends come visit me. It's like I'm watching my death play out in the people that I love the most. It's like the opposite of survivor's guilt. As awful of a time as I'm giving them by having to like hobble me around the house and watch me throw up and, you know, as horrible as that all is for them, it's going to be way worse when I'm not there bothering them. And that I can't do anything about. And that really eats me up, you know.
When we were planning this interview, you said the one thing that makes you uncomfortable that nobody really thinks about is how much we talk about the future when we talk.
Yeah. So much of conversation is future-oriented. So much. People talking about, they make these plans, you know. I watch these people and they go, this time is going to be different. I got the whole next 6 months figured out. I'm going to start running. I am going to adopt an even veganer diet. And I am going to call my father, though we are estranged, I am going to call my father once weekly and discuss with him things of his interest. This next 6 months are the next 6 months of my life.
And when you hear that, what do you think?
I think, I should wash my language. I think I envy that reset button that people seem to be able to press, you know, and I miss that. And I feel like they're disrespecting the present, which is all I have. I'm a big partisan for the present now.
The thing about your poems, they have so much life. I'm so glad you're publishing this. Is it hard to read these poems?
Yeah. I mean, the poem is a safe space. It's a place for the imagination. And as you said, it's a place for life. These poems, they have images that come from my imagination, which my interactions with my imagination are the closest things I've ever gotten to the wellspring of life itself. Like, the imagination is a very sacred place for me. It's the place where I've made things, where nothing was. And then I felt these irresistible, kind of sort of out of my control flashes of imagery. And my mind made itself and it made something at the same time. You know, there was nothing in my mind. And then an image ruptured out of it and got roped into language and my brain imprinted on it and it made my brain. And then it also made this thing outside of me. And that's really cool.
These poems are your babies.
Yeah, they are. They are. I've never been upset when writing a poem. You can't be selfish or self-centered or self-pitying when you write a poem. You're serving something else. You're trying to make sure the poem gets into the world safely, that it survives. Because some poems die during childbirth, you know? You can't successfully get all of them, but I can show you my way of thinking, you know? And what poetry teaches, philosophy is way better at communicating thoughts and truths, but poetry is great at showing how a mind works, the leaps and the associations and the way a bunch of different images will be clattering all around and suddenly braid together into a metaphor at the last minute. And that I think I can give you. And if I can loan you the steps that my mind took, the little dance that my mind did, maybe your mind will do it at some point without me for thoughts that matter more to you. And that would make my life have meant a lot, you know? And if I die, but my tricks keep on, all the little sleights of hands that my mind does, that's what I want in the world, is for people not to think what I think, but to think like me. And I hope that you read my poems and then that you try to do that.
Max Ritvo talking with WNYC's Mary Harris from the podcast Only Human. You can find Poem to My Litter at newyorkerradio.org.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.